This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Yen, the creator of Pure Lease and Yensa Beauty. What I love about beauty is it's ever-evolving.
Jennifer Yen is a TV villainist turned real-life skin superhero with a top-selling prestige BB cream on Amazon. She's also a two-time indie beauty entrepreneur who has strategized her way and adapted her brand through the recession and digital revolution. We hear this term authenticity being tossed around a lot. But coming up, you'll hear from the founder of not just one, but two brands with authenticity at the very core of both of them.
From New York City, you're listening to Beauty is Your Business, covering the intersection of innovation and business in the beauty industry.
Welcome to another episode of Beauty is Your Business. I'm Karen Moon. I'd love to introduce my co-host, April Franzino.
Hi, everyone.
We're here today with Jen Yen.
Hi.
So I'm so excited to finally have you here.
Thank you. I'm so happy we made it happen.
Yeah. So, you know, tell us how you got started, because I think that's one of the most interesting elements about you as a founder.
Yeah. So I'm a former TV villainess. So I used to fight Power Rangers on TV, and I had to wear 15 hours of heavy makeup, and I was under bright lights for almost 2 years, and this wrecked my skin. I developed psoriasis, rosacea, acute dermatitis, and I tried everything, went to so many dermatologists, and nothing worked. And that's when I went back to my grandmother's Asian beauty remedies like blue lotus and white tea and soy milk, and it worked. And this is what inspired me to create Pure Lease, my first skincare brand.
So that's such a great story. Like, who can say that they started out as a superhero and then ended up in skincare? That's pretty amazing.
Thank you.
How cool. So how did you bridge that gap? Like, how did it happen?
It was so hard. I mean, this was over 10 years ago when, you know, just – everything was so much harder in terms of getting your product out, like marketing or PR. And, you know, I just dove into it. I went to every single beauty show, a packaging show, and just started developing ideas, worked with some consultants, found an amazing chemist who was Turkish French. And that's what actually inspired the origins of Pure Lease was rooted in Asian culture, Asian remedies, but with French skin technology.
Interesting. What kind of technologies were you looking to marry with sort of the traditional ingredients that had been in your heritage?
Yeah. So some of the peptides, like lupine peptides, which was from France, and also our sea silk, which is one of the original ingredients, they were a blend of French marine plants. Because at the time, you know, I know K-beauty and Asian innovation is all the rage right now, but over, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was European skin technology. And that's where my chemist was trained. Mm-hmm. Was in France.
So I also think what's interesting about Pure Lease is you really focused on a specific segment of the market for sensitive skin, and you don't see that much of it really making that statement. Tell us more about how the brand evolved from when you started and where it's at today. Where can we find Pure Lease? What were some of the decisions you made around channel?
Yeah, so when we first started, you know, I was really excited to get into Henri Bendel, Fred Siegel, JD's Cosmetics, Beauty in Maine. We were at CO Bigelow, and we still are, but in West Village. But, you know, this was January 2008, and within 10 months, the recession hit, and it just really crushed us. And so many of the stores I mentioned closed down, and then we hit rock bottom. So I had to pull back, and our price points were a lot higher at the time. And what I wanted to do was sort of repackage and use more functional, simple packaging and also lower pricing. And I did that. And it took about a year and a half, almost 2 years. And when I came back to the market, it was a whole different world. I went back to some of our same retailers. They wouldn't take us. And I realized I was trying to do the same thing over and over again, like approach stores and retailers. And they just were very conservative. So I had to figure out a new way. And that's when, you know, we partnered with, you know, subscription houses like Ipsy was our, which was MyGlam at the time, but they were our number one retailer, I mean, our online partner. And that's how we rebuilt our business. So we reinvented Pure Lease into a digitally native brand. And that was, you know, it was so challenging because I felt like it was the only way. And I'm really glad we made that decision because that was the rise of social media. You know, Snapchat started getting bigger, actually Instagram and Facebook pages. And, you know, look at where it is today in terms of direct to consumer, social media, content building, as well as subscription boxes.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
So tell us more about the evolution of going from Pure Lease into starting Yensa. Can you tell us a little bit both more about the brand and the hero product and what inspired it?
Yeah, so, you know, after giving birth to my daughter, there is a period in Chinese culture, it's called Yuezi, where you do nothing and you feed your body through superfoods. So my mom was feeding me these black superfoods. And, you know, you're sitting there, you have a lot of time to think. And I'm like, wow, you know, my complexion was once again troubled. And I was using a lot of cover-up foundation. I was like, wow, I would love to marry like superfood science into color cosmetics. And that's what actually sparked the idea. It did take a few years for me to actually execute on that. So Yensa, it's actually derived from my last name, Yen, which means color and face. And Yensa is essentially superfood cosmetic. Each product is infused with 8 superfoods, 8 representing the lucky number in Chinese culture. It stands for, you know, good fortune, prosperity, and infinite possibilities. And if you look at our icon, it's like 8 number 8s wrapped up.
That's so neat. And so when you were starting this new brand, did you have the same approach with the digitally native you know, beginnings for it as you did with Pure Lease, or did you think about going a different direction with it?
So yes, absolutely. I knew we wanted to start out direct just because of my past experience with, you know, getting into retailers without a lot of awareness and how it really was super challenging. So when we started, you know, I knew that I wanted to control our content, the messaging, the press, and also our distribution. So we did partner with Ipsy because Ipsy's consumers is also evolving. And we partner with them. And my goal was to gain a lot of data, like right away, in terms of like what's working, what's not, and who our consumer is. And so right now, our bestseller is our BC foundation, which is a BB cream, a CC cream, a full coverage foundation with SPF 40 in one, and it's also infused with black superfoods. The black superfoods are black rice, black tea, black sesame, Korean black raspberry, and black mushrooms. And these are the ingredients that my mother was feeding me after I gave birth.
That's so interesting. And do you see, so you've collected a lot of data so far about this, your new brand's, you know, audience and that type of thing. Is there overlap between the two brands, or is it attracting different clientele?
Oh, great question. So I think there might be a slight overlap, but really there isn't, because I think so for sure, Pure Lease is more fun brand. It's more millennial. It has really cute, bright color packaging with fun ingredients. Pure Lease was who I was 10 years ago, where I think Yensa is who I am now. You know, I'm older. I need products that really perform, that can speak to the benefits that's going to do for my skin. And that's what Yensa does.
That's so interesting. So you're seeing sort of the different audiences that are attracted to the different aspects of both brands.
Yes.
That must be really interesting to you as a founder.
Yeah. So what I notice is that we get on Pure Lease, we get a lot of more awareness and conversion on Instagram. Uh-huh. And our Facebook on Pure Lease, it's challenging. Whereas Yensa right away, Facebook converted really well. And that's where it's higher than Instagram.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting because the audience tends to be slightly older. Yeah, that makes sense.
Did you see anything from the data that you weren't expecting? And tell us more about the Ipsy relationship, or, you know, and how that's different from working with other partners.
Oh, the data. So, you know, what I realized actually with Yensa or Pure Lease?
Both, either.
Okay. Yeah. So with Pure Lease, we realize that some of our customers are actually a little older. I would say not older, but like there was a large segment that was 35 to 40, 44. So that was really interesting. And then so our data is always evolving as IPSE's data is always evolving. They're always getting better and better. But what I realized, even with Yensa, we were able to get data a lot faster than with Pure Lease. You know, we knew right away like what was working and what's not. And they like within 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So interesting. Do you have any examples of ways that you've been able to sort of react to what you're learning as you've gone along in both brands? Has there been anything that you were like, oh, people aren't liking this or they're liking this more, and that's sort of affected, you know, how you've produced products or what you have in your assortment?
So what I noticed about, you know, Pure Lease, my first brand, we launched with 7 products and I didn't have any more resources to develop more products for the longest time. I'm talking like 5 or 6 years. So we stay with 7 products. So it was really hard. There was no newness. So, you know, press always mm-hmm. want what's new. And then it wasn't until I said, you know, I really want to try to create a BB cream, because I know BB cream's been around Asia for a long time, but I felt like it wasn't being done right in America. So, you know, there was tinted moisturizers that was sort of being touted as BB cream. And I just knew that there could be a better sort of formula. So I worked with a Korean chemist, because Koreans do it best when it comes to BB creams and CC creams. And we, you know, worked on it for a few years. And then then we got an oil-free formula with SPF 30 that had this beautiful matte meets glowy finish, perfect for the Pure Lease consumer. And then, I mean, within a year, that became our bestseller. And now our BB cream is number 1 in the prestige category on Amazon.
Wow.
So I knew that. And I realized that maybe our consumers, they want skincare and complexion, a multitasking product. So when I was developing Yensa, you know, we did start out with a primer. So it was still essentially color cosmetic, but really it also has skincare benefits. And right away I said, you know, we need to start with a amped up, like a really, really powerful CC cream. But there was already BB creams, there was already CC creams, and there was already foundation. I wanted to create a product that had everything, that had the BB cream, the CC cream, the full coverage foundation, SPF 40. And this took over 3 years to develop because we wanted a high SPF and we also have deep shades. Mm-hmm. So it was really hard to get the right amount of the SPF and to pass the testing so we can make those claims. And so so that's when I knew that because I knew that data point. So I wanted to start out on the other end, where it's like Pure Lease with skincare, mm-hmm. going into color cosmetics, but lightly, not heavy. We don't have a ton of like eyeshadows or lipsticks right now. And then with Yensa, I knew I wanted to start from color and mm-hmm. going into skincare.
That's so interesting. So it's really, they're both hybrids in some way.
Exactly.
So that's really, really
neat. I totally believe in having a hybrid approach.
Oh, yeah, it totally makes sense. But it's so interesting that, like, you've developed so much knowledge in terms of trying two different brands. It's almost like some people do it sequentially, like focus on one thing and then the next. Like, how are you managing both?
Yes. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when I was a millennial, I still remember, like, what I wanted. And, you know, because Pure Lease is sort of my first child, I feel like I grew up with it and I know this child, you know, whereas like Yen says, okay, so my second child, I'm older. So I sort of split my brain sometimes, like when I'm creating the products and the designs, because if you look at both brands and if you didn't know me, you would never think they're connected at all. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's what I love about it is, you know, with Pure Lease, we're thinking about fun. We're thinking about like fruity ingredients for next year and like watermelon, matcha green tea. And, you know, with Yensa, we're thinking about what are the benefits? What problems is this woman, you know, in this age category have, and what are the solutions, and what can we teach her about, you know, some of the blends of the superfoods along with certain, you know, classic ingredients like vitamin C or retinol that is really needed now, you know, as you enter a new decade. So, you know, so it's actually challenging, but fun.
Right, right. I mean, I guess it's not that different from, you know, a lot of times creative directors at fashion brands, like Karl Lagerfeld or, you know, like Marc Jacobs, were actually running multiple houses and brands and completely different collections. And so the ability to go from one to another is interesting. But I'm sure as a collective, you know about different audiences.
Yes.
In some way. And so, like, that's kind of really interesting where there's shared learnings.
Yeah, like the formula and the texture. Like, for example, Purelease, our BB cream, is oil-free. The BC Foundation is not oil-free.
Because those segments want different attributes. That's really, really interesting. And in terms of formulating the products themselves, have you had to source different types of formulators for your different needs, and how do you go about that and finding those people? And
yes, we do. We do work with several chemists, several labs and manufacturers, because, you know, not every lab is going to do it right. Like, my philosophy is we're not stuck on a certain region. Like, if we're developing a certain product, we want to go to whoever who does it the best, who has the best technology, who has the best know-how, and who's done it the longest. So, you know, when we were pitched from a lot of labs in America, like the BB creams, and we felt it, and we're like, there's a big difference. It feels like a foundation or a tinted moisturizer, and you are pitching it as a BB cream, whereas if you – my Korean labs and the chemist, it was night and day. So obviously it's who – like they know it. They've been doing it for over 30 years. They have the technology, the know-how. Or, you know, our sheet masks are made in Korea, and then we have American labs like, oh, we just bought the machine. Well, it's kind of – you know, that trend is very saturated now.
Right.
And you're probably going to do it for 10 times more expensive than the Korean labs, you know?
Right, right, right.
So it's – and then, you know, I know that, you know, Italy has the best, you know, baked bronzers. And if we ever did that, we would go to them.
Right. So you're really taking this global approach to finding the best
– Yes.
– ingredients and formulas.
Yes. Really? And we make a lot of our skincare in L.A.
Oh, wow. What types of things do you find yourself making there?
In Los Angeles, like our cleansers, I think, you know, right now the more simple, like our SPF 30 product, you know, some of the more, not that SPF is simple at all, but like our moisturizer, our body butters, I think we find that the more simple products can be done in America, but the ones that have like really cool textures or like multiple phases of texture, meaning it goes on like creamy and then then it has this like nice dry down and it feels like very glowy but not heavy. I feel that Koreans do that best. So we do those type of textures in Korea.
So up next, you'll hear Jen share a little bit more about her read on where the industry's headed and how that's evolving how she thinks about her business.
Here comes makeup in New York. The only and unique B2B makeup event at your doorstep. The next edition, September 11th and 12th in New York City at Center 415. Makeup in New York is a unique place where you can find from alpha to omega every piece of a makeup and skincare product and make your own line. Advised and guided by the savoir-faire of the most qualified experts in the beauty industry. Whatever your project is, you can find the best contact there. You can ask for an invitation on the show's website, makeupinnewyork.com.
So your brand was one of the first ones to sell on Amazon direct to consumers that way. What have the challenges been and the benefits you feel like of sort of doing something that not a lot of people were doing in the beginning?
Yeah. You know, we started on Amazon 2012. We were one of the first, and I thought it was so interesting when the buyer approached me. But at the time, we didn't have a lot of retailers. We were starting to dabble into subscription boxes, and I figured, you know, yes, there was not a lot of brands, and it wasn't very sort of pretty to be on Amazon. But I realized that I was shopping a lot on Amazon, and it was about convenience. So we just tried it. So we started out as wholesaling to them. And I can tell you, within months, we were doing so much more. We were moving so much more units than we ever have in any sort of retailer. And so I felt like, okay, this is really interesting. But then as more brands got on, we realized that we didn't have a lot of control with wholesaling to Amazon. So it became this huge machine. It was complicated. It's super complicated. And so up until a year ago, we actually pulled back, and now we're doing seller. So we sell through my own team.
Gotcha.
So we set up our own store. We do seller.
Okay. So, and you feel like that's been better for?
That's been better because, yes, there's a lot of issues with, you know, gray market products.
Right.
They're being discounted. But if you can control your own brand, you can actually wipe out the illegal sellers.
Right. I feel like that's such a big issue that people don't talk about a lot. When we produce articles for the magazine's websites that I work on, we have to be super careful not to link to, like you said, these gray market sellers, because they're pretty much any products you search for, you'll find them. And we have to have like a very careful eye so that our readers aren't purchasing something that's not legitimately being sold from the brand.
Yeah.
Because they could be getting, you know, a used bottle from somebody's mom or something, you know,
exactly,
who's selling it from her basement. And so it's something that we have to be very careful of. And brands don't want their, you know, the products not being legitimately sold either, because then people have impressions that your product's faulty or something's wrong with it. And so.
Yeah. And I think it kind of, you know, indicates how important it is probably to be on Amazon, so you can actually block a lot of the resellers, the illegal resellers.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like one of the main reasons to do it. I mean, like a lot of the brands that were very, very early, like Bliss and stuff like that, like that was kind of the main reason, right?
Yeah,
and it makes a lot of sense because it's really confusing to the customer. So it's been interesting to hear you talk about the evolution and how deliberate some choices were, others where you tested and learned. You know, where do you see the market and the consumer headed, and how are you kind of thinking ahead with your business, you know, as a nimble indie brand where you have a lot more leverage to test and try things and learn?
Yeah, I think that, you know, so for the past several years, we've been so focused on online, and now I see that there needs to be some shift to offline. And then what is that? And is it classic retail? You know, is it department stores? Not for us. Is it in a specialty, sort of like Ulta and Sephora? I do think that they're great. But then there's also a lot of these, you know, you see Target that is delivering really high quality products at affordable prices. And then you see CVS really ramping up their beauty with their awesome campaigns within Real Life and, you know, Unaltered. And then you see even Walgreens. Like, so now Pureless is in Birchbox X Walgreens, you know, where I think that you have the consumer that can actually spend more, but actually going to areas that are convenient for her.
Right.
Like if it's a Walgreens and they have high quality products, she's going there, and vice versa. And I also see the trend of a lot of young girls showing their mom or their aunt or even their grandmother in some instances to new brands. And what I mean by that is that they bring them to these experiential beauty shows, such as, you know, Generation Beauty, I mean, Ipsy Destination Beauty, Destination Ipsy, like these pop-up experiential sort of retail concepts, or BeautyCon.
So tell our audience a little bit more about BeautyCon or Generation X and what that experience is, because it's become a crazy phenomenon, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think, like, for example, Ipsy, they have, I think it's a perfect blend of online content, subscribers, fans of the brands, and you're marrying that with retail. So with Ipsy, you know, a subscriber will get their favorite products in their glam bag, and then they will have these pop-ups. They're now called Destination Ipsy, and they get to experience these brands, right? So now we just did one in Chicago. They had one in Miami. They had one in South by Southwest. And they're going to have their big flagship one in October, I think 11th and 12th. And it's going to be massive. It's Generation Beauty. So what they do is they do a great job pulling all these hipsters or their subscribers in, and they get to experience these brands for like 2 or 3 days. There's awesome programming. They get to get products at a really great rate just for those 2 days. So I think it's really fun for these women. And also they bring their mom. It's like a fun festival experiential show mm-hmm. for them. Yeah. Super interactive.
And just for the audience, I think, you know, what's interesting is this has become a phenomenon. Yeah. Not, you know, I think BeautyCon was one of the first ones, but, you know, CurvyCon, and there's just so SneakerCon. There's just like yeah. so many of them where they take the B2B model. Yeah. But I mean, I think with the BeautyCon, they're seeing tens yeah. of thousands of people. Yes. So it's become like a major yeah. event and different kind of retail experience.
I know. It's really interesting. Exactly. And then when you think, because like we're still young enough where we remember what it was like to shop at a department store. I mean, you see, you know, it's sad that you see like iconic places like Barney's like closing or certain retailers struggling. And you think, well, they're struggling, but you see these other, like, how are they creating excitement for these young consumers to come in? I mean, they're lined up. It's like wraps around, you know? It's insane. And I'm just thinking, oh my God, then you go to these department stores, it's dead, mm-hmm. you know? And so like, what are they doing that is like, why aren't these department stores evolving and reinventing retail? And then you have these festivals that are really immersive and they're interactive. And I think a lot of it has to do with creating awesome content, leveraging social media. I mean, all of that, creating like new products. Because I think, do you get excited going into a department store?
Depends.
Yeah. I mean, when was the last time you've gone into, I mean, because I know you guys get beauty products, yeah. but I can't remember the last time I've gone into a department store and like bought a beauty product.
Yeah, I like the discovery part of it. I think it's like trying new things. And if you're just like, I want to, especially
yeah.
products that that you really want to like touch and see and smell before you purchase them.
Yes.
Which is a lot of beauty things. I think that's fun. Like, you know, whether it's a department yeah. store or like a Sephora or Ulta, it's like a big candy store. Mm-hmm. But it also depends, like you're saying, I think the reason that those, all the cons are so appealing is because you're getting like the super fans of those industries at those things. I don't mm-hmm. think you're getting like the mass audience that, mm-hmm. you know.
Yes.
So I think they're good, but I think that they're limiting in a way because mm-hmm. it attracts a certain audience, which is good, and everyone wants to have their super fans. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's something in the middle of all those things yeah. that would be like a sweet spot.
Yeah, and I think that's where these shows, like, they kind of like mm-hmm. offer that, right?
They're
right.
emerging. Well, it's like the beauty junkie early adopter, and I think there's a lot you right. can learn and test, like, yeah. in person. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's interesting, too, because, like, everyone wants to be a beauty junkie. So much of it is the content programming.
Yes.
You know, that's a huge draw for them. So that's kind of really interesting. And, you know, I think in IRL, like, you know, so many interesting pop-ups have, mm-hmm. have shown up, and it's just, like, it creates a completely different like playground effect, like the drunk elephant pop up, and mm-hmm. like you know, there's just so many different ways people are doing things now.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more. You have done some really cool like influencer collaborations. Like, how did you think through? You know, what was the process of that? Was it really organic? Did you have someone? Did you always knew that it was going to be the person you worked with? Like, because you guys have done a couple of really cool things together.
Yes. Well, you know, my most proud one is actually on International Women's Day for Yensa Beauty. And, you know, I said, because everything happens in 8 in with Yensa, I realized that International Women's Day was March 8th, and we were developing 8 shades of our BC foundation. So I immediately was like, we have to launch on International Women's Day, but how are we going to do this? And so the idea came because I knew that if we were just to launch it, it would just be another foundation. So I wanted to have more meaning behind it. So last October, I flew to New York. I met with Dress for Success. I was like, look, we're launching this product. And then 5 months later, we want to do this campaign and we want to partner with you on it because it is a nonprofit that is really aligned with what I believe in, what my values are, which is promoting women's economic independence. So they were on board. So then my next step was to actually come up with this Superwoman campaign. So our products are based on superfoods. So I found 8 women that had 8 stories of struggle. And it was in collaboration with Dress for Success campaign, Your Hour, Her Power, basically telling, you know, asking you to donate out of your salary to help another woman. And so I found 8 amazing women. They were pretty much my friends. We didn't pay them because I really felt that it had to be a very organic grassroots sort of campaign, because we should all come together to actually use our influence for something like bigger, like larger than ourselves. And if an influencer wanted to be paid for that, like this is not the right campaign for you, because we want to put our budget towards actually other women dressed for success. And so we were able to get Michelle Fun, who was awesome. She's a, you know, I like to call her digital trailblazer, because she is. She's responsible for so much of this, you know, content creation, content creators. And then, you know, Jessie Draper, she is a female investor. She comes from 4 generations of male investors, you know, and then also Asia White. She was a foster child from the age of 12, and she's a survivor. And then like Jana Kramer, the country singer. So it was awesome. So that's how I thought about it.
That's really, really cool. And do you feel like women tend to relate to other women that are inspirational that are not? I feel like there's an interesting line between celebrities, which people do still aspire to, and then influencers, which people also do in some ways, but they, I don't know, some are more relatable than others. And why was it important to you not to just like put a face on this and like call it a day? Like, why did you specifically want these people to tell your story as opposed to, you know, the flashiest name or like the biggest influencer or whatever, like you said, other than the money, you know, that you wanted to put the money towards the cause.
Yeah. You know, I really feel like we're a real brand created by a real woman, and we want to serve real women. So that's kind of how I saw it. And, you know, if you look at these 8 women that, you know, I chose, they're real and they have real stories of struggle. You know, I use Michelle Phan as an example, because, you know, people think of her as an icon. She really is, but she also has a lot of soul, and she has a lot of like struggle behind her and stories. You know, she went through so much, you know, and so to me, I'm all about using real women, or having real women be on our platform who are natural, like just, because I feel like that's who I'm talking to, and that's authentic. Who our consumers, and it's really authentic. Yes, exactly. That's a perfect word, is being truthful about who you are. And I never felt that I should hire and pay a ton of money for a spokesmodel for my brands, especially for Yensa, because it's derived from my last name, and it's because I want to put our resources by creating really good products.
So up next, we'll get to hit the pan with Jen and get to know the deeper side of her.
Hi, I'm Roseanne Gold. I'm a chef, an author, a food writer, and the host of a new podcast called One Woman Kitchen. So excited to be doing this, because I'm interviewing the most fascinating women in the food world. And you don't even have to be interested in the food world or be part of it to enjoy these remarkable women's stories. It's diverse, it's international, it's intergenerational. What's most exciting to me is that the concept of One Woman Kitchen means something different for everyone. You can listen to One Woman Kitchen every week at onewomankitchenshow.com, and also where all the best podcasts can be found.
It's Hitting the Pan.
So we're back, and this is one of my personal favorite parts of the show, because we get to know more about the founder behind the brand. And so what we're going to do is take a spin at the salon chair to see who gets to ask the question first. And it lands on April.
All right. So you mentioned that Yensa is based on, and both your brands are based on, a lot of traditional ingredients that are in your family's history. What is your all-time favorite comfort food that, you know, your mom or whoever in your family made growing up that you just can't live without? It's your favorite thing.
Great. I mean, anything with rice and chicken, like, I'm good. Mm-hmm. You know, I always love Asian food. Anything Asian.
Yum. Now I'm hungry.
I know.
Nice. And so we'll spin the chair again. And it landed on April, but since she just asked a question, I'll just kind of scooch it over to me. So Jen, we've known each other for a while, and it's I love to see, you know, you grow as an entrepreneur. Your business is doing amazing. It's so exciting. The product is really good. But also, I've seen your daughter evolve with you. Tell us about juggling the business and, you know, being a mom and being a jet setter. Like, how do you balance it all, and what's the secret sauce?
So,
and you have great skin, but we already know the secret sauce.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's so I'm not technically a single mom per se, because her dad is, you know, I have my daughter 60% of the time and her dad is very involved. So 40% of the time when I do have my daughter, my mother helps me. So it really enables me to sort of work worry-free. I don't have to stress. My mom is always there. So that is sort of my secret sauce. And also, you know, what keeps me motivated is knowing that I am setting an example for my daughter. You know, my mom actually was the breadwinner in the family. So I know it's because I come from a really traditional family, but my mom is actually the breadwinner. And I think without knowing it is sort of set an example for me. And so I hope to do that with my daughter.
That's beautiful.
Amazing. Love it.
So Jen, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's probably three pieces of advice I always live by. And that is be authentic, really know yourself, and never give up.
So what's the best way that listeners can get in touch with you?
You can follow me on Instagram at JenYen1, that's JenYen, the number one, or Yensa Beauty, which is YenSa Beauty, or Purelisse, that's PURLISSE.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's always such a pleasure.
Thank you.
April, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Karen. Thank you, April.
So thanks for joining us for another episode of Beauty is Your Business. We look forward to seeing you guys next time. Hugs and kisses.
Have a nice weekend.
This has been Beauty is Your Business, produced by Mouth Media Network. Copyright 2019. Keep in touch on Instagram and Facebook at Mouth Media Network. And find prior episodes at beautyisyourbusiness.com. And wherever the best podcasts are found, your brand message can be on this show. Email us to find out more at podcast@mouthmedianetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.